to the Creator Coco podcast. I'm your host, Ian Wambai. This podcast helps you become a better creator by helping you learn from what other creators have already figured out. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us a tweet at Creator Coco. That's Creator and then C-O-C-O-A. In this episode, we talk to Stella Murugi about what is yield farming, savings versus investments, what are the strategies for yield farming, how does staking work in crypto, and which platforms can you use for yield farming? I hope you learn something that helps you become a better creator. So today, the topic was something called yield farming. Okay. Is that something you've heard about?
No.
So I guess I'll just go through a presentation. I'll talk about what yield farming is. It's something I'm learning about. I just heard about it recently, and I'm also trying to understand it better. So I was hoping in a session like this, we can all talk about yield farming, answer questions about what it is, because I realized it's a whole thing that's happening in the crypto industry. Yield farming is kind of the process of you have crypto or you have a certain amount of money. Let's just think about all this as money, because the idea is to make this idea something that is easily understandable. If you have money and you have it in your savings account, usually you're gaining interest or you're gaining a certain percent every year on top of that in fiat. So if it's in your savings account, you're probably getting there's something called APY, that's annual percentage yield, something like that. It's basically the percentage of cash that you get on top of your savings account. And the reason why we look for investments is because if you put your money in a savings account, inflation or the decrease of the value of the currency, for example, the Kenyan shilling or the dollar, it might decrease at a higher rate than you're getting from your savings account. So what I mean is, if you leave your money in the savings account, its value and its purchasing power can decrease because of inflation. And inflation is basically the government is printing more money and all these weird economic things are happening. So the value of one Kenyan shilling or $1 is decreasing. And for you to buy like more bread, you need to pay, instead of 50 bob, you need to pay 60 bob. So when that happens to your savings account, your money that you've worked hard for, the value decreases, and you don't want to do that. So that's why you look for investments, you look for other things to put your money in that can grow at a faster rate than inflation. So if you can get something that, if inflation is 7%, but you can get an investment that takes your savings to 30%, then you've beat inflation and you've made a profit on top of it. And so that's what we mean when we say yield farming. In crypto, we're just saying that if you have a bunch of crypto, what can you do with it that can increase its value over time? Because you don't want it to just sit around. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. I didn't know that you can also do that in crypto. Like, do you mean like you can invest in something else with crypto? Also, isn't crypto not affected by inflation anyway? I don't know.
Yeah, so first of all, yes, you can do that in crypto. And it's a new thing. It's a relatively new thing that is coming up that people are starting to do now. And the reason why it's possible is also partly because crypto is a new industry and there are many protocols and sites and platforms competing, and each of them are offering their own benefits. So the objective of yield farming is to figure out which opportunities should you use to maximize the returns on your profit. And then the other thing about inflation. So the cool thing with crypto is it's volatile right now, but it doesn't experience inflation. Okay, maybe I'm wrong about this, but it doesn't experience inflation in the same way that the fiat currency does. Because the reason the fiat currency experiences inflation is because the governments keep printing out more money. They're like, we need money to pay loans, we need money to do this. So instead of creating value, they decide to print more money. So the value of the money decreases. But with crypto, usually the supply is locked to a certain limit. So no one can print any extra Bitcoin, no one can print any extra Ethereum. And that's why it's possible to do this, even in crypto. So in crypto, if you leave it in your wallet, the only risk you're taking is that the value will decrease, basically, and people will want to buy that token less, but it won't experience inflation.
I was like, since the Bitcoin stuff does not incur or experience inflation, it's not necessary to do the yield farming. It's just an extra thing that you can do.
Yeah, so the thing with yield farming and crypto, and the reason why it's a much more interesting type of investment, is because if you leave it, it's okay. The value might go up or down, but you're also wasting an opportunity, because in crypto, it's possible, like compared to fiat. Fiat, for example, can offer you APY. That's your annual percentage yield of your savings account. Usually for a bank, it can be like 0.1%. But in crypto, you can find opportunities that gain you even 100% APY. And so that means that if you play your cards correctly, you can convert your $100 into $500 if you want. So it's for people who want to kind of play that game. And there are people who are making huge returns. So it's for those people who want those kinds of opportunities. So now we've talked a bit about yield farming. We're saying we do this so that we can gain profits or we can maximize returns. And there are a few strategies you can use. So the question is, now I have a bit of Bitcoin, I have a bit of Ethereum. What are some things or places I can do or I can go to start this whole yield farming thing? So there's a few different strategies that we're going to talk about. And the first one I'm going to talk about is something called liquidity mining, or using a liquidity pool. So this one I'll try to explain. Even myself, I'm just trying to understand how this whole thing works. Let's say you have some extra crypto and you want to distribute this to the liquidity pool. So what you do here is you provide your tokens to a site called an exchange. And one of them, for example, is one called Uniswap, and there's even one called Aave. So you provide it, and then in return for you providing this capital to this liquidity pool, you're going to get tokens and fees in return. So you, for example, you have this money in your savings account and you say you want to use the liquidity pool method to increase the value of your crypto and get more yield. So you provide it, and then in exchange, they can provide you a percentage of the fees that they get. And also you can get on top of that extra APY, like extra percentage yield, and also you can also get extra tokens. For example, Uniswap has a token that is called Uni. So let's say you have Ethereum and you decide to provide it, you might get a special token that even adds more to your value. So that's one called liquidity mining. I had something interesting to say about that. So, okay, the other thing I want to talk about was staking. But I wanted to know, do you get this liquidity mining? Have I explained it well, or do I need to go deeper into this?
Just go deeper, maybe more lay.
More lay.
Yeah.
So yeah. Also, a lot of these ideas are abstract, and also because I don't understand them very well, it can also be difficult for me to explain them in depth because I haven't done this for such a long time. So let me ask,
what essentially, like when you give your tokens or something to the liquidity pool, what do they do with it? Are they like a organization, or what is it?
Okay, so let me read this. Liquidity pools are stored crypto assets to make trading of major exchanges on decentralized exchanges easier. Liquidity pools are reserves of tokens secured in the smart contracts. They provide liquidity and attempt to mitigate the problems caused by illiquidity in such systems. So the way I understand what that means is that for us to understand liquidity pools, let's first talk about an idea called staking. I'm not sure whether they're related, but I in my head at the moment I think they are. So now let's talk about staking. So now let's zoom out of liquidity pools, and let's say you still have your Ethereum, and now you are interested in doing something called staking. So Bitcoin uses something called proof of work to verify its transactions. So the analogy we can use here is if you have 10 miners or 10 people who are about to go on a race, Bitcoin says that for you to win that race, all of you have to run towards the finish line. And then the first person to crosses it, to cross the finish line, is the one who's going to win. And for that verification, they're the ones who are going to get the reward. So that's how Bitcoin works. It tells everyone, all of you run together, and then the first person to solve the problem is the one who's going to be rewarded with Bitcoin. So, and that's how new Bitcoins are generated. And that's called proof of work. So everyone does the work, and then the one who does it the fastest is the one who's going to win. But now the only problem with that, and the problem that everyone is talking about and we're experiencing, is that only one person ends up winning, but nine other people have also wasted their energy to try and achieve that objective. So what Bitcoin does and what Ethereum does before they switch is it's going to waste a lot of energy. So all those people who ran, they wasted their own time and they wasted their own energy. And so this is a very wasteful process. So the world is now switching to something else called proof of stake. And what proof of stake says in this race, instead of all the 10 people running, it's only going to choose one person and have that person run and have them go across the finish line, and then they get rewarded. So only one person runs, only one person gets rewarded at a time. And the reason why we need staking
Sorry,
is
just
because,
1 second.
yeah.
What does running mean? Do you mean, is it part of an analogy or is it like
It's an
a thing?
analogy.
So I'm asking, in the
Yeah.
analogy, but in the real world, what's the race? What's running?
Okay, so running in this case is how new Bitcoins are generated is if you want to send money to someone else using the Bitcoin network, you're going to post a transaction to the network. When you post that transaction to the network, every like 10 to 40 minutes or so, the people on their computers. So Bitcoin is a distributed network. Distributed means that, or decentralized means that it's running on all the computers, on a lot of computers all over the world. So all these computers, they have to try to solve a problem that the Bitcoin network gives them. And this problem is a mathematical problem that is hard to solve. So you need a lot of processing power to solve this problem. It's like a math equation that these computers need to solve. And this math equation can take a certain amount of time for it to be solved. So the person who solves this mathematical equation first is the one who is able to post that transaction on the blockchain. So it's basically the race is an actual race in the real world where that the all these computers are trying to solve this problem that the network has given them. And then the first person to solve this problem is the one who gets rewarded with a new Bitcoin.
So say I want to create a Bitcoin, right? I can't just make it. I have to do the exam or that equation in my computer system so that my Bitcoin is a real Bitcoin in the blockchain, or?
Yeah, and that's what is when you hear about Bitcoin mining, when they say I'm mining Bitcoin, what they mean is they're running those equations and calculations on their laptop. So you need processing power. So and there's different ways to get it. Sometimes you can use your own laptop, but your laptop isn't powerful compared to what other people have. Other people have like are digging tunnels and like buying GPUs and things like that so that they can only run those calculations. So what people do sometimes is you combine many, many laptops so that all that processing power is combined, and then you can start mining your Bitcoin. So that's when you hear mining, it's just someone running that program that keeps doing those calculations. And if you win, you can get a piece of that. Let's say you have, this is a crude example, but if you combine 100 laptops, let's say, and yours is one of them, and then all those 100 laptops end up being correct, then you can split the Bitcoin that you get for that result among 100 of you. And that's how new Bitcoins are created, by verifying the transaction. So the math that you're doing on your laptop is verifying that everyone else is doing the right thing and that no one is trying to scam the network.
Oh, okay, I've understood. Can I go on a bit of a tangent? Who is the network? Who brings out these rules and equations?
So the network is just the Bitcoin protocol. It's just a program, basically, and a system. And how the system works is it's basically software that can run on anyone's laptop. And when I say network, I just mean all these distributed nodes. And when I say nodes, I mean computers and different centers around the world, which are running this software. So if you download the Bitcoin software and start running it on your laptop, you immediately become a node. You become part of the network. If you're using Bitcoin to send and receive something, then you're also part of the network.
Since it's people that have a lot of processing power that can mine the Bitcoin, isn't it a bit unfair for people that can't mine? Like, for example, if you do the underground tunnels and stuff, like you're saying, to mine, doesn't it make it such that it's only the rich that can mine and get everything? Or there's something else. Is there an equalizing? Is there something that makes it that they can't do that? Or I don't know. Is it?
The short answer is rich people will always have an advantage. And poor
No, that's
people.
not. Yes, I get that. But I mean, literally,
Yeah,
if
someone can
someone
buy.
in this fiat in any currency. If someone that's rich can print a lot of money and keep it for themselves, isn't that an extreme disadvantage to other people? Are you guessing me? Like if I can print money, I'm literally a god of the currency. That I can only get richer through printing money. But there's an equalizing thing that I can't print the money. Another place prints the money.
So you have a good point there. Some people though, okay, with cryptocurrencies, the thing you want to avoid is one person or one group of people gaining at least 51% of the network, because the thing that Bitcoin depends on specifically is that it is owned by a lot of people, so that no one has majority control over the whole network. Because if they do, they can completely disrupt the entire network. So how something like Bitcoin prevents this, I'm sure like it has the same problem where there are a bunch of rich people who own a lot of Bitcoin. But because Bitcoin and the price has gone up and it's very, very expensive, it's going to be very difficult for one person to purchase or be able to buy all that Bitcoin at once. It's not impossible, but it's a possibility. So yeah, that's a challenge. And also there's people who currently mining on your laptop is not practical. Maybe when Bitcoin started, you could have done that. But it's not possible, I think, anymore, because the competition is too high and people have set up specific businesses that just all they do is mine for more Bitcoin. So now how people are going to be making money on the network is mostly going through fees and all these services and businesses that you can build on top of Bitcoin. But for Bitcoin itself, I think it's going to be unlikely for one person to ever take control. But again, I agree with you. Richer people have more access to Bitcoin.
Okay, so back to what you were saying about the investments.
Okay, so mostly when we talk about crypto, we usually talk about, how can I get crypto? How can I do that? But now what do you do with this crypto once you've gotten it? And earlier we were talking about this liquidity, this thing about the liquidity pool. So you're asking me about the race, and I was explaining the race. The race is basically this process of mining, and this process of mining is a process of verifying transactions. So is this transaction legitimate? And that's how Bitcoin, the Bitcoin system works. It uses all these computers and all this processing power that I'm talking about, basically to verify that the user has done a correct transaction and that no one is trying to scam the system. That's what the race is about. So now they're switching to another process called proof of stake. And I was talking about this proof of stake. It's more efficient. People go one at a time to the finish line to figure out to do the validation. And the reason why now we're talking about this as a as an opportunity for investment is because only one person is doing this validation at a time. They're called validators. Because we only have one validator or one miner, we need to make sure that they do the correct job. Like, we need to make sure that this person actually answers the question when they get there. Because if they fail, if they try and then they fail, it ends up costing the whole network because you have to have these people try again. You have to go select someone else and then have them run again and try to see whether it's going to work. As opposed to Bitcoin, where if the first person fails, another person will just come up behind them immediately and pass. So yeah. So and so how do you make sure that the person gets the correct answer? So you do a few things. They have to stake, or they have to put in a certain amount of their own money into this process. It's called staking. They lock up some coins as collateral, so that if they don't solve the problem, that part of that collateral, I'm not sure a percentage or all of it, can be taken. So you say, I will put in one Ethereum, and if I don't get this right, I'm going to lose a part of it. Okay, and then if you get this right, you're going to get a reward, because the whole point of running this race or trying to do this validation is so that you're rewarded. So you put in a collateral. If you lose, you're going to the collateral will be taken away. But if you win, you gain a certain amount of money. And so that's the core of the staking idea, which is that there's a place where if you put in some money, the money is at risk. But if you gain, you're going to win. And how do they determine, how do they choose this person who's going to do this validation? So you have a few of them, and you also, again, you also don't want to be biased towards richer people. So what they do is they check a few things. They check how much money have you been staking. So how much, like, have you staked 1 million or have you staked 2 million? They also check the how long have you been staking it for? So because that matters, because if you have been staking it for a longer time, it means that you have been correctly validating the transactions as they come for a long time, and you haven't been losing your money. Because if you've been losing your money, it means you haven't been doing a good job. And so they check how much money you've been staking, how long you've been staking it for, and then they also add a bit of randomness so that they don't always pick the people who are only rich and the people who are like in a certain position. And yeah, so staking is saying I'm going to lock up my money in this process for a long time, and I will be getting these results. The longer you lock it up, the more rewards you're going to get over time, and the more the system is going to trust you. What do you think about that?
So when you want to stake or something, is there a place you just put your Bitcoin, or must your laptop do the math or something?
Yeah, so staking is actually pretty easy nowadays. You can go to things like Coinbase. You can use even like Uniswap or Aave to the you can do things like supplying the liquidity pool capital. I know this stuff is abstract. It's deep, but that's also what I'm trying to learn as well. Because I realized that there is more to crypto that's happening, and those are the kinds of things I wanted to explore. So I know it's not and I'm sure there's other explanations online that you can find that are explained as well with nice animations and all of that stuff. So here we're just talking about the general ideas. Basically, if you take anything away from this staking talk, I'm just saying staking is basically locking up your capital. It's like saying, I'm locking it up. I'm hoping that I'm going to get back some stuff in the future. That's all.
There's a place to lock up. Like, is there a place to just go lock it up? Do I have to do the math stuff?
Yeah, you don't have to do the math stuff yourself. I was just explaining how it works in the background, but there's websites which allow you to easily do it. All you have to do is press buttons and just say how much you want to lock up, how much you want to stake.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I want to talk about the next one, which is borrowing and lending. So sometimes these networks need to lend money out to people. And this is something that's new also that's happening in crypto. It's relatively new the last few years. Okay, also crypto is new. So crypto now allows you to do a lot of borrowing and lending. If you need to get to borrow money from someone else, or if you need to lend money to someone else, that's another way you can do yield farming by providing capital to people and also borrowing capital from people. And the thing that people do when it comes to this borrowing and lending in crypto, let's say you have $100 and you want to now use this $100 to gain even more leverage on top of it. So you take this $100, you buy Ethereum with it, you have $100 worth of Ethereum. And then you borrow like Ethereum from another website online. Like you go online, you use AV or you use Uniswap. Okay, I'm not sure whether those ones allow you to do that. Let me see. Compound, Uniswap, Balancer, okay, Synthesis. You go to one of these websites with your $100 in Ethereum, and then you say, I would like to borrow some money, and you can use this Ethereum as my collateral. So then they give you, I don't know, 120 Ethereum if you only had 100. So then you go and you use this Ethereum to get another loan, to do more investments, to go and do more staking. And you also use it to borrow more coins. So you can use this as a cycle where you borrow, you invest, you repay, you borrow, you invest, you repay, and you're just using other people's money in a cycle in order to gain more leverage on the initial capital that you had. What do you think about that?
You say there's like websites that you can click and stuff like that. And since it's actual money or whatever, the bitcoins, are there some companies or websites that take advantage and they actually won't do the thing? Or are there some that are legitimate, and how do you tell the difference?
Yeah, so the ones I can talk about now are you can try some of this stuff on Uniswap. There's a website called Uniswap. There's another one called AV or AAVE. There's another one called Compound. There's another one called Curve. There's one called Balancer. And there's a few of them, but you can try Uniswap and Compound and AV. Those are the three, I think, those are three big ones, I guess.
When they borrow your money, of course, they return with the interests, or?
Yes, exactly. When they borrow, they return with interest, and also they add other benefits, like they also give you more coins, more of their own coins and things like that. So apart from gaining on the interest, there's also other ways they incentivize you to give them money.
Okay.
So now let me try to summarize this talk. So we were talking about yield farming, and yield farming is the process of switching between all these different strategies so you can maximize your returns on your crypto. You don't want it to just sit. It's possible for your crypto to gain 300% returns if you're smart enough. And the reason why there is this opportunity is because crypto is a new industry, and there are many different protocols which are competing for dominance. And so in that process, a lot of them are creating unique opportunities for investors. And if you're able to navigate through these opportunities, it's possible. Although it's also possible for you to lose a lot of money, so be aware. So that's one thing. You can use things like Uniswap, AV, Compound, Synthesis to do some of these trades and try out some of these things. And how the specific strategies for how you do it is, you can do liquidity mining. This is where you provide liquidity, or you provide your money, the money that you want to invest, into a pool as capital. And then they will give you more value. They will give you coins, and on top of the normal yields that you're going to get. So that's liquidity mining. You can also do staking, where you lock up your coins for a certain amount of time and see where you're gonna get a reward or share in some of the rewards if the staking was if the transactions were successful. And then you can also use leverage. So this is where you borrow and you lend money in a cycle so that you get even more leverage, and you can even like if you have $100, it's possible for you to be actually gaining interest on $200 instead, because you borrowed and or you managed to cycle your money in a way that ended up like that. I don't feel like I completely understand these ideas myself as well. This was just something I wanted to do so we can start talking about them, and at least now I understand them a bit better. I might have messed up in so many places, but we will keep improving over time.